What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to another live edition of the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, coming in from the OTG frat house, Corey Waldron, Jack Manuel from Australia, and Dalton Pence from Kentucky. Guys, how are we doing today?
I'm trying to have a collar to pop.
I'm ready to shotgun some takes right into my page, right?
Guys, I'm leaving. Corey's hosting the show today, so I'll talk to you all later.
So what's going on? The NBA Outlet is live. Fellas, we're doing a lot of hot take, shot fake. Obviously, this is probably considered the deadest time when it comes to sports. There's no NFL. There's no NBA. It's just a little bit dry for the next 10 days or so. So let's make some stuff entertaining. First hot take, shot fake. Dolphin, you're going to play, right?
It's been quite some time. You'll have to refresh my memory.
All right. So basically, if it's a hot take, you agree with the take. If it's a shot fake, it's ass, and you don't agree with it. And it's no bueno.
That's that frat house vocab. Let's go.
Yeah. All right, first up, and you might have seen this today on Twitter. This was a popular one. Rondo, as of right now, is better than Chris Paul. Hot take or shot fake?
That is the shoddiest, fakiest, thingiest. That's the worst thing I've ever seen since Corey putting his hat backwards and collar. Oh, he's putting the collar down now.
Yeah, now we gotta go. We gotta get back. Two buttons deep, but
Well, I think that, you know, that would certainly make Chris Paul angry, and would want him to punch him in the face again, because we know the established beef that those two share. No, Rajon Rondo is in the waning years of his career, and yes, Chris Paul is too, but Chris Paul is at least still a capable enough defender. I think his basketball IQ, despite the fact that Rajon Rondo is a smart player, I think Chris Paul is smarter in the sense that he impacts winning basketball plays and positive basketball plays. I think Rajon Rondo is smarter for almost his own selfish benefit, and, you know, in a lot of ways, and that might be, you know, a bit naive to say. I think that both of them are certainly on their last legs, but, you know, we'll be doing the top 50 for OTG basketball very soon, and Chris Paul is certainly on the narrow margins there. Rajon Rondo wasn't even the conversation. You know, I was doing my writing down my list yesterday as we were sort of talking about it, Nick and I, Nick, myself, Corey in the chat, and I was like, all right, well, Chris Paul, just put him down, put his name down, he's a name. But Rajon Rondo doesn't even think in the conversation, so Rajon Rondo is like a top 150 player, maybe.
Nick?
Dawn, what do you got? I'll go last.
Okay. So, I mean, Jack, I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. I mean, all you really have to do in this sense is ask LeBron and the Lakers who they'd rather play with. And I'm sure that every single player would choose Chris Paul. Oh, maybe not Rondo. Rondo probably would pick himself. But, I mean, yes, we talked about it on the Russell Westbrook Chris Paul emergency OTG pod. Chris Paul has experienced quite a bit of a decline this past season, whether it be injury or his just offensive woes of not being able to blow by his man like he used to be able to do. But in that case, he's still better than Rajon Rondo almost in every aspect of the game. I mean, we talk about how good Rondo is as a passer. I mean, Chris Paul is basically the same in that regard, maybe a little better in terms of vision. He's a better defender, like Jack, you said. And he shot over 30% from three this past season, which kind of gets overlooked. And Rajon Rondo has never been known as a perimeter shooter. So we'll see. I think Chris Paul's game is going to continue to decline. But in no world, maybe in an alternate universe, Rajon Rondo is a better player. But on planet Earth, that's not going to fly. That's a shot fake.
Yeah, it's a terrible take. It's a shot fake. It's an ass take, as Corey would say. it's just like, what? Chris Paul's still a top 50 player. Rajon Rondo hasn't been a top 100 player for a while now. Like, he's not, he's a bench player. Chris Paul is still an NBA starter. I don't even know why this is like a real discussion.
Now, do you guys know who said the take?
You.
I'm insulted, Jack. You've said many bad things about me. That's by far the worst one.
This
was Ryan Hollins from ESPN.
Can we address this beef that's going on between Jack and Corey right now? Jack, what's going on?
This is common banter. This is another day at the office.
No, Corey and I met in person. There were hugs shared. There were handshakes shared. But, you know,
there was dancing, there was boogie.
And I mean, Corey can throw some moves on the D floor. Nick can vouch for this. You need that banter. You need that banter. And, you know, the whole – it's a shot fake. The whole rivalry between me and Corey is a shot fake.
Now we may be flipping enemies after this next take. The Houston Rockets win more games than the Los Angeles Lakers. Hot take or shot fake?
Houston, we're going to go D-Money with that one.
I'm actually going to – I'm going to go with a slight shot fake here. I think that the Lakers win more games. I think that it's going to take quite some time for Russell Westbrook and James Harden to be able to learn to coexist on the basketball court. And regardless, I think that the Lakers have a more talented roster up and down. I think that they've added some good role players. I think that they've added some questionable role players on questionable contracts. But I love the Danny Green addition and other guys along that nature. I like Boogie Cousins and obviously Anthony Davis. So I think that the Lakers kind of edge out the Rockets in terms of regular season wins. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the postseason if Harden and Westbrook can mesh.
You know what, Corey? I'm going to take your little hot take and shot fake and turn it into a sort of JBT sort of scale. I'm going to go a warm take because I think that it is likely that the Houston Rockets win more regular season games because I think that they're built for the regular season. And I think that they have a lot more motivation for the regular season. You know, we've seen James Harden, you know, gunning for the MVP on numerous occasions. Russell Westbrook is an absolute madman in the regular season, then really takes a step back in the postseason. You know, Dalton sort of touched on it. You know, the postseason is where it really matters. That's where I think the Lakers sort of had the edge with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. But James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and some good pieces and some good coaching from Mike D'Antoni, I think that they could have a much better regular season. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter when it comes down at the end of the day. So I actually think it's a warm to hot take that I think that the Houston Rockets will win more games.
Ah, man, this is a close one because Jack brought up some great points. I think Houston values the regular season a little bit more, but I want to go with a shot fake here because I think LeBron has a little bit to prove. I'm not saying he has something to prove to us, but he wants to prove to people that, hey, I'm still LeBron James and I'm going to have an incredible season. Then you have Anthony Davis and they want to start that duel off with a bang. So I think they'll be pretty close in the standings, but I think the Lakers will be a little bit better by the end of the season because Anthony Davis and LeBron James are just that much better than James Harden and Westbrook.
Yeah, I lean on a shot fake for this one as well. Next up, now this isn't really a take, but this was a tweet, and I just find it kind of humorous, so we'll see. There's a chance that the Philadelphia 76ers gave $170 million to a taller Michael Carter Williams Jr.
I will not take
shot fake.
Ben Simmons slander for any – no, I will take all of it because, you know, he did what he did against the Brooklyn Nets, but – no, like, I mean, if we're talking about the two sort of max contract extensions that we've seen already handed out to Jamal Murray and Ben Simmons, you're giving it out to an all-star, to an all-NBA potential player in Ben Simmons. You know, yes, he's skipping the FIBA games, which disappoints me greatly, and I'm glad that I didn't buy tickets to see them, and Anthony Davis has also said that he'll be missing out too. So obviously Ben Simmons is the fulcrum to Australia's, you know, title chances in FIBA. So we got no hope in the world. Paddy Mills and Matthew Dellavedova are really going to have to step up. But no, Michael Carter Williams, you know, he's still playing, apparently. You know, Orlando Magic, they're the point guard that they so sorely needed and sought after. But this is a contract that deserved to be given out. I remember Elton Brand sort of saying in interviews when he first got the job that, you know, he'd be handing it out as soon as he possibly could. And, you know, Rich Paul got his money as well. Ben Simmons deserves this contract extension. Tobias Harris said he's shooting threes. Don't believe that. But Ben Simmons has a ways to go. And, you know, I think that these contracts always look lofty on paper. But by the time it's finished, you know, Ben Simmons is 27. You'd expect him to be peaking. You'd expect him to at least have some sort of post move and some sort of 15-footer by that stage. But who knows? But it's a big season ahead for Ben Simmons. And, you know, this could end up being a hot take if he has another poor season and doesn't add anything to his offensive repertoire.
I just want to interject that every single NBA player is shooting threes in the offseason. Like, JaVale McGee shoots threes in the offseason. No, I just love when that comes out. Like, oh, he's shooting threes. Like, yes, we see
and
everyone
an empty gym.
It just Hassan Whiteside shoots threes in the offseason. Dwight Howard does too. All right, guys.
I shoot threes in the offseason too.
Hey,
same. I mean, it's almost kind of criminal to call it a hot take because, Jack, like you said, Ben Simmons is deserving of that max contract because, I mean, honestly, what else would you give him that he would take? I mean, with his level of play for the first couple of seasons in Philadelphia, I find it very hard to believe that he would accept anything less. But, I mean, I'm telling you, looking at that tweet, I think I actually sent the tweet in the group chat because it was absolutely comical. I mean – you think of a player that Ben Simmons reminds you of, it's kind of like a Michael Carter Williams in the sense that
more similar to a Rajon Rondo. I've heard like the taller Rajon Rondo.
Okay, I can buy into that because the vision and the passing is there for Ben Simmons that isn't necessarily there for MCW. But the thing about MCW is he is a quality defender just like Ben Simmons is, and both of them can't shoot to save their lives. So it's kind of one of those things like if your life is on the line and you need this guy to hit a three with a hand in his face and he gets three shots, you might as well start saying your goodbyes, saying your prayers, because it's probably not going to happen. So I'm going to go with the shot fake here. But it's one of those where I almost got traveled for the shot fake because I tried to spin off the pivot foot. So,
yeah, I'm going shot fake here. Like, I think the one thing that's just, like, really undersold with Ben Simmons is that he's, like, a physical specimen. Like, he's 6'7 to 6'9". He can run the floor just about as good as anybody in transition. If you don't have two guys back, he's going to score on you. Just think, like, I get it. He doesn't shoot threes, but he's still really good at pretty much everything else he does. He's still a good passer. He's still a good rebounder. He's still a good defender. He can still score inside if he gets one-on-one and in the paint. So, I just, Ben Simmons isn't my favorite player, but his slander is starting to get annoying.
No, definitely a shot fake. That's just like people being dumb. Ben Simmons has also kind of proven that he still has a ton of upside at this point in time. Like, he's still a beast that you can't stop. You can stop Michael Carter Williams Jr. Next up, close to your heart, Dalton. Russell Westbrook is better than Kyrie Irving. Hot take or shot fake?
Shot fake. You know, I mean. As much as I want to say hot take, just because I have to somehow hop on the Westbrook bandwagon ever since I've been bashing him since about 2015 for being in the MVP conversation with Harden for the past couple seasons. Kyrie Irving's just more of a complete player. You kind of see they're both athletic. They're crafty around the rim. I think that Kyrie's a better facilitator and guy who can set up offense better, but really what kind of puts it over the edge is the perimeter shooting. I mean, Russell Westbrook's one of the worst three-point shooters for his position and for his role that he plays in the NBA. I mean, statistically, it's horrendous. I mean, he shot like, what, was it like sub 20% or just over 20% for this past season? I can't remember which one, but I mean, Kyrie Irving is light years better in that regard. And I think that there's more upside. The guy is younger. So, I mean, this is one of those things to where, like, I want to say Westbrook with everything inside of me, but it's a shot fake because Kyrie Irving is better.
Kyrie's in his peak. Westbrook is post-peak. I think we've seen the best of Russell Westbrook. Not to say that he can't maintain the level that he's produced over the past couple of seasons, but I think that, you know, age stops for no one. Age stops for no one. And in that sort of sense, you know, his body is going to start continue to debilitate just by pure virtue of minutes and all the surgeries that he's continued to have. You know, he is still one of the best athletes that we've ever seen in the history of sport, not just basketball. He's an absolute menace. And he provides a mentality that sets him apart from probably literally maybe every player in the NBA. I don't think anyone has the Russell Westbrook game-to-game mentality. And that alone makes him an all-NBA caliber player probably for near the rest of his career until, you know, he proves otherwise, even if he doesn't have that three-point shot, like Dalton was sort of saying. But who knows? You know, in this Houston Rockets system, you know, he could be revitalized. He now has some spaces around him. Kyrie Irving is by far a better contender. And we talked about on the Brooklyn Buzz just a little bit earlier, Russell Westbrook has higher MVP odds, which surprises the hell out of me, because there is no way that James Harden or Russell Westbrook is going to win the MVP next season. I can't see that happening. Whereas Kyrie Irving by himself, if he brings the Nets to a third seed, 50 games, and everything just gels, that makes him an MVP contender. He was a near MVP contender for points of this season with the Boston Celtics. So I think it's a blatant shot fake. But, you know, I think that, you know, both of these guys were all NBA players. And you're probably splitting hairs a little bit. But I think the drop that Russell Westbrook has taken, we almost underrate him somewhat with all the sort of takes flying around now. And to that extent as well, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I think obviously this is a shot fake here. I think just one thing you can strictly look at is efficiency. Obviously, Kyrie's a superior shooter, doesn't have the same turnover level as Russell Westbrook either. I just think he has more of a place on a championship team. So obviously, Jack and Dalton pretty much nailed all the points. No point in diving deeper.
Yeah, it's a shot fake. Next up, I think this is pretty simple, but maybe not. John Wall has the worst contract in the NBA. Hot take or shot fake?
Hot take. I think that it's going to be a hot take.
I think it's probably a hot take too, but I'm trying to think of what are some other horribly horrific contracts. I don't think.
I mean, Chris Paul anything... is like the first one that comes to mind at $44 million the last year.
Nick Batum's the, up there.
Yeah, Nick Batum's pretty bad, but at least his doesn't have that many years left.
Right.
Yeah, and
Whiteside at 27, but that's expiring too, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Russell Westbrook's. I think Russell Westbrook's is bad. Very sneakily, I think Terry Rozier's is trash.
yeah.
That's dumb. You know, like, so for the other D money.
Kevin Love's is still... It's actually not as bad as it was because the cap's still going up.
You and Nick, I remember you trashing
it. I mean, no, I trashed it, but it's still been bad. He hasn't really played yet. I said he was going to be hurt, and he's been hurt.
Watch the thing. Just watch. Send it to Portland.
He's making $35 million a year, I believe, or $34 million. I don't think it's as bad because now guys are making $47 and $44, but at the time, it was a lot of money for Kevin Love at $34 a year.
Well, let's rank those guys. If I think the probably consensus is that John Wall is in a tier of his own at number one. Then you have Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Kevin Love. And is Nicholas Batum's expiring this year or next year?
I think it's next year.
Yeah, so do I. And then Terry Rozier. That's like your next sort of five. What's the worst one out of that bunch? What's the second worst contract? I mean, like, that's hard to say.
Blake Griffin's?
No. Blake Griffin is still a superstar.
Blake Griffin rose to a new level last year offensively. I mean, the guy is legitimately adding three level
another year though scoring. Getting hurt at the end of the year having leg injuries.
Well, you're right, but the thing about it is we learned in the NBA timing is everything and nothing is ever concrete, so what might not be a bad contract right now in a year or so could be one. I think that it's down between Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook. I think that Chris Paul, I put him as a kind of a far worse contract right now just because of the aging. I understand that Russell Westbrook may never really rise to a new level, but sort of maintain in that regard. But he's still 30 years old, and there's still some room to go in terms of him being able to maintain that peak. Chris Paul is on the verge of a serious decline. I mean, he's 34 years old, is continuing to play career low in games. And when he is on the floor, you see that there's the drop off in that athleticism. And for a 6 foot sub 6 foot guard, I mean, that's a true hindrance to what he's able to do on the basketball court.
I got another name, Wiggins.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe we forgot Andrew Wiggins.
I didn't forget Wiggins, but I don't – like, his I don't think is actually as bad. The length is really bad, but at least his, like, price tag isn't – like, there's a slight chance for Wiggins. Where all these other guys, you definitely have seen their best basketball. Or, like, there's a tiny hope for Wiggins. I'm not saying, like, I'm expecting him to have a breakout year, but at least there's, like, some positive hope there.
At least you have time, too. I mean, he's still younger. I mean, you're talking about Westbrook and – Chris Paul are in their 30s, and John Wall is not even going to play this year, even though he's a little bit younger. I mean, he's coming off serious injuries. So Wiggins is kind of – I mean, it's a bad contract, but it seems like that there's a little leniency due to the age and due to the fact that he is kind of a distinguished scorer, but he needs to add more facets to his game.
I feel like Hayward's borderline too.
Yeah.
Depending on how this season turns out.
But that was – Yeah, I think probably I'll be stealing the words out of Dalton's mouth here, but that wasn't something you could necessarily forecast.
Well, neither was John Wall, though, technically. I mean, if John Wall is healthy and playing the best basketball he was playing 2 years ago, 2017, are we really as concerned about John Wall's contract? Probably not.
Okay, well, then by that assessment, I think Andrew Wiggins, by virtue of the fact that if you're not taking health into account, is probably on the worst contract because he hasn't produced it at all. And probably similarly, Terry Rozier, because Terry Rozier proved nothing last season. You know, he proved it in the postseason the year before. But I think that, you know, a more general question I'll throw at you guys before we get to the next one, Corey, is how are front offices getting smarter? You know, we saw 2016, those contracts being handed out to Mozgov and Dang and Biombo and the likes of that. We didn't see a lot of those in this free agency period. You know, probably Terry Rozier is the one that sticks out. There were some overpays, but there weren't some four-year overpays, gigantic overpays. Even Terry Rozier is only 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the NBA front offices are getting smarter per se, because if you look at that 2016 offseason, that really is kind of an outlier because of the increased amount of cap space that was available in terms of around the NBA. So, I mean, guys had no choice but to throw money at the players because, I mean, the agents are sitting there pushing the market, and with the money, they're going to go for the highest amount. But it still seems like I'm not sure that the front offices are getting smarter, but it seems like they're definitely losing leverage in terms of payments as well, because, I mean, there's the whole conversation with supermaxes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would say they got probably a little bit smarter. They weren't as rash, where you saw last year, you know, 2016, you saw these huge deals to role players at the initial pop. Like, we still saw most of the big stars kind of sign when free agency started. I know a lot of the free agency signings happened on day one, but you saw the big name sign. And I, like you said, I don't think there was as many bad long-term contracts. People are starting to realize, like, hey, I can overpay a guy for 2 years or give him that second-year team option, and that's not as bad, like, as long as I can maintain my flexibility. I think they're starting to get a better idea how to use team options and player options and just overpaying somebody for a year or two instead of 4 years.
Yeah, their biggest issue is targeting the right players. I guess right. I mean, some of the guys, like Aminu, for example, for instance, is the first guy stuck to my mind of like Orlando going after him and giving him maybe not too much money, $9 million a year, I think it was.
And was that the Kings with Corey Joseph and Deadman with these like 2 year 25 and Trevor Ariza 2 year $25 million deals? And then there's like even like for those sort of lesser deals with the Lakers, you know, giving KCP like player options. Giving, you know, JaVale McGee a player option, you know, Nick sort of touched on the team option at least gives them flexibility. It looks more like a 1 year deal, but Corey, there's a question in the chat after Nick jumps it in. Yeah.
Like I'll say this, there was probably 5 to 10 teams that made really, really bad moves in 2016. There's probably 5 and under teams that made really bad contract moves this year, where last time it was just like everybody. And like, yeah, I get the outlier of the cap space, but a lot of almost more than half the league had cap space this year.
Yeah. And I also back to the one point, the deals are just shorter. You know, 2016, you wanted to lock guys up. You didn't want to have like a fear of losing a guy. Like now it's more so I don't want to be locked down to you in case you do want to leave, whatever the case may be, because that expiring deal is crucial in trading matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. That question, by the way, lads from Crimson Striker. Does Anthony Bennett shed the bus label in Houston?
Oh, my God.
No, he doesn't.
No, come on. Dolphy around on Team Bennett yet?
Damn. He doesn't shed the bus label. He doesn't even step foot on the court for good minutes. Come on,
he could be Julius Randle. I don't know.
something like that, yeah.
It's impossible for him to get rid of the bus. He was a number one pick. He's never going to be an all-star. Like, it's already done. Like, it's a sealed thing.
And honestly, it's not even his fault. He should never have went number one. If we're being real, like, he's one of those guys who just, like, got drafted way above his ceiling, and it's, like, no fault of his own.
That was a very questionable pick. I had him, I think, it was the first year I started paying attention to the draft. I think he was pegged as, like, my 6th or 7th best prospect on the board. So I was like, okay. You do what you need to do. Maybe I'm just looking at it from a wrong light or a different setting.
Yeah. I'll say this. One of the best player development teams in the Brooklyn Nets had him on their roster, and they couldn't turn him into anything. No disrespect to Houston. I don't think anything's
going to come there, there is no disrespect needed nor intended. I mean, it's a non-guaranteed deal for a reason. Honestly, yeah. I think it might be kind of a G League play to where if he does perform, maybe they put him on a two-way. But I can't really see it being anything more than that.
He was good in the G League last season. Like he started to get that 3-point shot, and I think that you know he's not going to shed the bus label, but you know he could at least see some NBA minutes, maybe for the Houston Rockets if you know the injuries start to happen. And like sort of Dalton was saying, they chuck him on a 2-way deal, and he starts to perform for their G League affiliate.
I mean, I would love the story of it. To get to the NBA and play. Definitely not rooting against them, but I don't necessarily see it. Like Nick said, the Brooklyn Nets having such a good development team, they couldn't really get anything to happen with Bennett. So that would be where I stand on that. Next up, Deion Waiters wins most improved player of the year. Hot take or shot take? He's motivated. Wow. I don't think I saw the post. He was really offended by people calling him fat. And
On that sort of thing, as like just a dude in general who has had insecurities about like body image, and I think as a lot of people, men and women do have, this fat shaming that happens to athletes, I think is borderline toxic. The stuff that's happening with Zion, the stuff that happened with Deion Waiters, you know, maybe I'm thinking into it too much, but we're talking about human beings here, guys. They got like Deion sort of said, like you were sort of saying, Corey, in that Instagram post, he was incredibly heartfelt, and you know he's gone through some shit in his life. But that still affected him tremendously. This whole Zion stuff with him at Summer League, the sort of, you know, yes, it can be fun and stuff if it's done in jest, but I think that the intentions behind it to create some sort of buzz and, you know, to get clicks because Zion looks shit in a fucking polo sitting on the bench, I think it's mean and I think it's cruel. And I think that it needs to stop. But Deion Waiters, I don't think he's going to be missed up most improved player.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, you pretty much said exactly what I was going to say. You know, I hate the generation now for, and I do it sometimes as well, and I'll quote something trying to get something witty on Twitter, but it's the generation of clout. And, you know, it all drives back to that Thanos meme, all that for a drop of clout. So, I mean, I think that we put these athletes, these professional athletes, especially in the NBA, on this pedestal. It's almost like they're kind of superhuman above, like, the natural laws of being a human being on planet Earth. I mean, if anything, you would almost think that fame kind of drives you into a state of isolation because people try to use you and stuff like that. And we've seen that kind of where Jahlil Okafor was stood in his fight with depression. But I mean, I think this kind of brings us back down to Earth. And athletes are people too. I mean, people go through emotions and some people do have mental issues. And I think that that's kind of one thing that we need to do is end the stigma in America that mental health doesn't need to be taken seriously because it does. So, and me and Corian have had multiple discussions about this. It's time to start taking this stuff seriously.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are spot. Obviously this is a shot fake. I mean, he'll have the most improved body in a positive way. Like he's got a six pack. He's looking good. Like I'll give him props for that. Yeah. But like, Deion Waiters' game just isn't – he's just not going to be a most improved player because he's not consistent or efficient. He's just one of those streaky guys. Unless he found the rhythm and Miami can do something with him, it is what it is. And I think it's so funny that people are, like, trying to critique Zion. First off, he's a rookie. He has plenty of time to get in better shape if he wants to. And I would put a really good bet out there that he's probably in better shape, maybe not body fat percentage, but actual shape in terms of fitness – than 98 or 99% of the people that are covering him. So please, let the kid live his life. New Orleans has good food.
Definitely a shot fake. I think Waiters is going to be solid this year, though, for Miami. I actually have a feeling he's going to have to play a big role with them losing Richardson. And just for some offense, I think his role increases.
Waiters on, baby.
I will agree with you guys on the fact that just lost my train of thought. But there was a Zion thought there.
Well, like,
he was there.
I don't care about body shaming. He's posting selfies with no shirt on Instagram.
And they were body shaming him, so.
I'll jump in on the design sort of thing in terms of, you know, he has had, I think Dalton would be able to attest to this too. He had, you know, obviously issues with his body weight and that sort of thing, you know, in high school and heading into college. But he was able to shed that in his high school days, because he was able to, you know, focus on his body. And I think that, you know, in New Orleans, yes, there's the whole bullshit talk of gumbo, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's a professional athlete. And I think Zion's mentality, you know, is second to none. And, you know, I think that the fact that we're still questioning him, you know, the number one picks, the probably 1, 2, and 3 pick, those guys don't get to work out post-college. So they've probably got like a month or two off where they're not doing much. They're not doing, you know, the workouts for teams where they're, you know, doing one-on-ones, trying to showcase themselves. They know where they're set. So like Coach K sort of alluded to, maybe you shouldn't have played Summer League. I don't agree with that. I think that, you know, there's been way too much read into it. And for a guy that we've sort of touted as the next sort of, you know, Messiah, you know, Zionology baby, then I don't know why we continue to critique him. We're finding ways to critique a guy when, you know, it was the opposite earlier. It was just like, we want to find everything that's good about him. It's just the false narratives. I'm getting a little bit annoyed with it.
You literally just said I was going to say, basically, but that's exactly spot on. What kind of what Coach K was alluding to is he might not be working out as hard, like the press tour with the draft and everything else. Like he's probably just not in, like, at stamina-wise, as you said too, Nick, he's probably just as strong, but he's probably not doing as much cardio. Like, he just hasn't been doing the due diligence on his workout and meal prep. Like, it's okay. He's still a kid. Like, I know, like, John Moran was eating cheese fries, and some, like, writer was like, don't the Grizzlies know, like, a diet plan? Like, yo, let the 19-year-old have some freaking cheese fries in the middle of July. Damn.
No, for real, though.
And, like, you don't get a cheat day.
if it started impacting them on the court and they look slow and people want to criticize and say like, hey, maybe if he lost some weight, he could be a little bit quicker. Yeah, but get that. But like Zion is literally one of the best athletes and he hasn't even played an NBA game yet. So what are we talking about?
Yeah, ridiculous. Last one for the shot take hot take portion of this show. 2013 was the best NBA season of this decade. Hot take or shot take?
You were talking about this on Twitter today.
This is my hot take.
Why? Why? Because I wasn't writing for OTG. I wasn't the Brooklyn Nets were better. I wasn't an intense NBA fan.
Well, 2013 was Nets' Bulls first round.
The Pacers were really good.
The Pacers were good. The Pacers were good that year. Was that the one seed year? No, it wasn't the one seed year. That was not the one seed year. So you had Pacers good. Knicks were good. Stoudemire, Melo. You had the Miami Heat. You had – that was their title run, peak Miami Heat over the Spurs. You had Kobe Bryant's final stretch of his prime. It was James Harden's first year in Houston. It was Steph Curry had the 51-point game at MSG. Curry, it was the Warriors, like, breaking out party right before they actually started winning titles was 2013, where we all saw glimpses of what was coming. That was also Miami's 27-game win streak that season.
Is this a 12-13 season or 13-14 season?
It's 12-13 season. 12-13. Corey, you're right. I mean, there's literally – I was – when you tweeted that, I'm like – I started reminiscing. I'm like, damn. We really came from great, and probably won't hit that for quite some time. Like the Miami Heat Indiana Pacer rivalry, almost by itself, may put it at that because those series with Paul George, the Paul George before that horrific injury months later in the summer of 2014. So a year before, I mean, we all saw the dunk on Birdman. I mean. The Spurs-Miami Heat series was great. The Knicks were somewhat relevant, or they at least tried to be. And like you said, the
– Wait, 13 was also, I'm pretty sure, Paul Pierce, right? Or no, he was on the Nets. No, that was Bulls. Yeah,
he wasn't on the Nets yet.
In 13?
No.
Right. That's the – wait, that might be
– That was the year the Nets were the fourth seed, and they lost to the Bulls in the first round. And then the following summer, they were mad because they lost a game seven without, Joakim Noah even playing. I think Luol Deng might not even have played. Or, like, there was a lot of injuries, and Nate Robinson cooked them in the first round.
And James Harden ended up in Houston in 2013, and that's what you like to see.
So. Damian Lillard won MVP Rookie of the Year as well, and it was, I think, Anthony Davis was still it. So that's a heck of a drop.
Anthony Davis won the Rookie of the Year because he came out in 2012, so...
Oh, maybe it was the season before because it says I'm looking at the Wikipedia page.
We're getting old, fellas.
MVP was LeBron James at 12-13. Yep. Marc Gasol, Defensive Player of the Year. Damian Lillard, Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, it was Lillard.
Just want to point out, Dalton said we're getting old, and I'm not even sure if he's old enough to drink.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes, I am. I just turned old enough to drink.
Isn't 2013 the same year that Dame sent the Rockets home, or is that 14?
I think that's the year after.
Too soon, bro.
I was 14.
I'm going to say shot fake, though.
Bullshit. No.
3-point shooting and spacing is all what I'm about. Like, that was cool. But now I'm looking at the top 10 scores. Number 10 is 19.4 points per game, and it's Brooke Lopez. And number 11 is Monte Ellis from Milwaukee. So,
Monte Ellis.
David Lee is number 15. I'm much happier with this star class in the NBA currently than that one. So,
personally, from a personal perspective, it was the 15-16 season. I think it was that season, I believe, was the season I started writing for OTG. Dude, it was the LeBron block season, one of the greatest comebacks in the history of the league. But I really think that this 2019-20 season has a real chance to top it all because of the amount of parity that we have that we've spoken about at length, the way that the superstar talent has been dispersed across the league. It's an open and wide race. You know, the LA teams are bumping. You know, there's a team in New York that's actually good. So I think that there's a really exciting season ahead. And funnily enough, I was going to bring up with you guys as we dropped off this podcast that we should do like a recap season for some old season and old games, you know, steal some ideas from, you know, Bill Simmons and Kobe, because we know we ain't fans of him here. I kind of am. But But, you know, he will not he will not besmirch my boy Caris LeVert and Nick's boy Caris LeVert. But, you know, we could recap that game, the Stephen Curry game or the Eastern Conference Finals, so Corey can relive it and cry all over again and have to go to the gym to work out his feelings.
Jesus.
Pop up his collars and get his Bud Lights going and get those backwards hats and get the OTG merch on.
White Claw Summer 2019.
Oh, take a look at this guy.
Sounds like all day, baby.
Happy last time you were chugging.
Taking the lead.
Oh, please.
I'm going to start practicing.
Oh, God.
I'm going to practice.
The City Boys have went down one.
I'm agreeing with Jack. I think this might be the best NBA season ever. Like, there's just so many great duos and so many close games that I'm already envisioning just a ton of, like, game winners and stuff. Should be a really good year.
So this kind of leads, because we're done with hot take, shot fake. That's it. That was the last one. For me, it's a hot take. That was one of my favorite years.
I got one take I want to throw out there.
All right, take.
Corey's a frat boy.
Hot take. and three-pointer and one. Definitely at the buzzer.
Unfortunately, it's definitely a shot fake. I actually absolutely despise and hate frat kids with a passion.
You just said it was White Claw 2019. No, well, you can't escape this.
It may be. I'm not a big beer guy, so I prefer the water for my sensitivity. Not playing. I've been with OTG Basketball for 1,374 days. I've not been fired yet. Next up,
it just sounds like something they'd say. I'm like an ESPN show. Like, how did I not get fired yet?
So talking about duos, if there was a 2-on-2 tournament right now between like the top duos in the league, who wins the duo tournament?
And we're saying that Kevin Durant is
he's healthy.
Well, I'm taking those two.
Give me Kawhi and Paul George.
Give me LeBron and Anthony Davis.
Oh shit! Everybody, right, so
because everybody's out of the duos, like, who's stopping Anthony Davis? Like, he just has so much more size, and I think he's probably the closest in versatility to cover the other guys. Where like Paul George and Kawhi, I'm not sure if they're able to match up with AD. LeBron, if you're asking him to play 2-on-2, it's like 2-11. He's going to go all out. And like, I would love to pick the Nets, and I think KD would probably win a 1-on-1 tournament with everybody in the NBA. But I think Kyrie, they could attack defensively. And I know this is supposed to be a fun exercise, and I took it too serious.
No, it's all right. You broke it down. I mean, I was leaning with LeBron and AD as well because those two guys are tall, and those two guys are very versatile. Like, they're just tough to guard. So now, better question. What are the top three duos right now in the NBA? I'm just going to be throwing questions at you guys now until you guys decide you want to stop talking.
Well, it's AD and LeBron. It's Kawhi and PG. Who's that number three? That's the sort of big one because, you know, you can chuck in the Utah guys. You could chuck in the Houston guys. You know, you could figure out some sort of duo in Philadelphia. Is it Giannis and Chris Middleton? I don't know who that third one is. You know, I think I'm going to have to sort of riff with you guys and sort of figure it out as we chat.
I think it's going to be KD and Kyrie at this point. I think you have to look at it in the sense that you hope that KD can come back to somewhat the level he's been able to play. I know Achilles injuries with big men. I mean, then there's a story to be told about how he's able to come back. But, I mean, you talk about the talent level. I mean, both those guys are uber-talented. KD's possibly the best player in the world before he gets hurt. And Kyrie, we all know about his ability to score and stuff like that. But, I mean, really, if you don't go with them, who would you go with? Because, really, I don't think there's another duo on that type of level.
Yeah, I think Jack wasn't including them because KD's not going to be most likely healthy for majority of the season. If not, that's an easy pick for the top three right there. It's really intriguing because, you know, you look at James Harden and Westbrook as pure players on their own, not as a duo. That would be probably the third most talented duo. But the combination of those two aren't a perfect gel. At least we have yet to see that. You know, you look at Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, that's a pretty good gel. We've brought up Jamal Murray and Jokic. You know, some people would probably throw out, like you said, Giannis and Middleton, just because Giannis is so good. You could throw out Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid.
Yeah, I was thinking about them, yeah.
Dame and CJ.
I think Dame and CJ is pretty close. I think CJ is probably a little bit lower than some of the other guys we've included.
Now, Warriors, I mean, Steph and Clay, is that worthy? Or even like Steph Draymond. Is Steph Draymond terrible for duos because you have a defensive-minded ball handler in Draymond?
No, I don't hate it at all. I think that.
But I mean, obviously, that's like that's a couple tiers down. I'm aware of that. I'm not saying in the same sense.
The injury to Clay.
Clay's healthy. Like Steph and Clay is back close to that level because they're lethal. Like they're that's a duo that can drop 90 on you, and that's not a crazy take.
Yeah, it's Steph and Clay when healthy, I think.
Yeah. So what's the thought about Curry and D'Lo as a duo?
It's going to be really interesting. All I know is if they score 130, they're going to give up 129 because I can just imagine the defensive woes. I mean, they're just both of them are going to get switched into an oblivion on an island. So it's really going to be interesting in that regard. It's going to be interesting to see how D'Lo is able to move off the ball and play well with Steph Curry. You know, Clay is very good with moving off the ball and setting screens for his role as a shooting guard. So can D'Lo kind of mimic that style of play that Clay's been able to incorporate into this Golden State offense that's kind of propelled their identity into this offensive superstardom? So I'm just not sure. I just don't know the fit between Curry and Russell. I mean, they're both talented. I think it can work, but until you see it, it's one of those where there's some questionable fits in that regard.
I think Steph plays a good majority off ball as is. And now usually you're seeing a lot of ball handling duties from guys like Andre Iguodala, you know, Draymond Green in the past. Now you're putting an actual capable scorer that they have to respect. It could actually end up making Steph's life easier because other than Kevin Durant, you know, I would say D'Angelo Russell is a better playmaker than Klay Thompson or anybody who's probably been on Golden State the last two seasons in terms of just a pure playmaker in terms of passing and scoring.
I think Draymond's a pretty good playmaker, but I think
you don't respect his all, like his shooting or his
that's completely fair. But I guess you know by virtue of talent, probably Russ and Harden. But in terms of fit, I don't think it's them at all. Like you can just make an argument for so many, and I think it's a question that will be a lot easier to answer. Once we're in like you know even December by that stage we'll be like. We can go, okay, this is what this team looks like. This is what this team looks like. We can make more informed judgments. But right now, we're sort of, you know, making wild predictions. And that's the fun part of our NBA podcasting.
Yeah, that's the wild, wild west of NBA Twitter, the last half of July. Next question. And this is my curiosity, more or less. Who is your most hated player in the NBA? Like, you can't stand him if you see him. If he's on your screen, you want to change the game. Who do you not like? And of course, I'm not necessarily saying that you don't like him as a person. I mean, like more so, like you just don't like watching him play basketball. Unless you don't like him as a person, then just spew it out. I guess.
Is it too early to say Rui Hachimura, or do we kind of need to watch him? Yeah, I mean, well, like you said, we're not talking about the person; we're talking about the player.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of like styles that I really really hate. I can think of players that I like dislike that just annoy me for certain things they do. Like Aaron Baines has always just annoyed me. I don't know why. Like I've just never been a big.
You just not like Australians, Nick. Like what?
All my Australian love goes to you, Jack. It all goes to you. So there's none for anybody else. I gotta just you know straight up. But no, I don't mind Ben Simmons. Like I don't hate Ben Simmons. Aaron Baines just really annoyed me. Like I always think he's like giving cheap shots, and he always fouls and doesn't get called for it. Annoys the shit out of me. Kyle Lowry is a guy who I never haven't necessarily loved with his like floppage and all that stuff. Let's see who else.
Draymond.
I don't hate Draymond because I appreciate his style of play. His antics are really annoying, but I have a respect for his actual game. I think Zaza Pachulia is an asshole, obviously, for the injuries he's caused. Who else is there?
I think I would probably go with Zaza is probably at the top of my list just because I think that, you know, what he does actually, he's not a good basketballer. So, like, he's literally just there because he's a big body. And he happens to be 7 foot tall. So that would probably be my sort of pick. But there's other guys out there that are just, I don't like watching. And, you know, they're not that fun. You know, I've always disliked, you know, Draymond Green and some of his antics. Whenever I see him bark at a referee, it makes me cringe. And it's just like, he gets away with so much compared to any other player in the NBA. You know, if someone else said a word, it'd be a tech compared to what hit. The antics that he sort of displays. And yes, he culled that to an extent. It was like, oh, wow, that was the old Draymond. And then, like, it just came right back in, like, you know, game six. And then I'm going to throw it out there. There are times where I cannot stand to watch James Harden play.
And I was waiting for someone to say it because unless you're a Rockets fan, it unless you just love watching that style of play. It's really kind of hard to watch it unless you're kind of cheering for him because he does a lot.
Joakim Noah's kind of annoying too.
Yeah. So I mean, Draymond Green is. I mean, I don't really hate a lot of players. I was going to say Russell Westbrook. If you had asked me this, if you had asked me this a week ago today, I would have told you Russell Westbrook. But I've been literally binge watching his highlights, trying to get a profound love for the guy as a player, and it's challenging. It's probably it's like my New Year's resolution starting in middle of July. So it's really rough. But Draymond Green, the fact that he thinks they get no calls, but yet he's kind of on a pedestal in terms of technical fouls and stuff like that. So,
Corey, who you got?
Reggie Jackson. Ricky Rubio,
yes.
James Harden, Evan Turner, Andrew Wiggins, Doug McDermott.
This guy.
Monte Ellis.
McDermott.
Monte Ellis.
He's got to throw the extra shade.
Well, his name was in a couple weeks ago. There was that tweet. Monte Ellis is working out for teams. And I was like, son of a bitch. I was like, you guys just didn't see him, I guess, right? Last year at the Pacers.
Boris DL, is that an – able to answer. Can I use
Boris?
Why didn't you like Boris?
Can I use 2013 Boris DL maybe?
We're a fan of 2013.
I could not stand Boris DL when he played for the Spurs.
Love me some Boris.
Really?
I've watched too many illegal screens using the hips, and you know, I understand that it's a league wide phenomenon, but the guy is just when he's playing the Rockets and the fact that I do not like the Spurs, and that's our kind of in-state rival. Yeah, he's probably the guy that I'm pegging on that board, and he's probably never going to leave.
Insert full name has some names to throw at us. Andrew Bynum, George Hill, Kawhi, wow.
George Hill, I don't know how I forgot about you, buddy.
You're just forgetting like all these people that have been linked to the Pacers.
He was a top-level hater. Oh, Andrew Bynum was a Pacer, too. Loved his stint. He was great.
How do you hate Kawhi? I mean, like, I understand how you could, because if he straight torches your team every game, of course
you hate him. If you're a Spurs fan, you probably hate him. Other than that, I don't know how you hate Kawhi.
Corey as well, another one for you by an insert cool name, Tyreke Evans.
Oh, yeah, definitely hate Tyreke Evans.
You got to feel bad. He has a little bit of the off-the-court issue.
I mean, I just hate for Tyreke Evans for the fact that he's the last person I gave expectations to.
I'm starting to get the hunch that Corey Sam, whatever guy that is no longer with the Pacers, he's putting him on this list.
No, Corey Joseph, I love him. Come back, baby. Thaddeus Young, can't say a bad word about him either.
What about Paul George? What's your feelings on Paul George?
Play your hand. Play your hand, I guess.
He said, don't you pull that Band-Aid off.
Play your hand. He played his hand, I think.
Yeah.
He's. I don't believe in loyalty anymore because of him either. So he's an NBA player for everything.
You really can't believe in loyalty now because of him.
I mean, in some ways, you respect Paul George because he told the Pacers, like, hey, straight up, I'm not re-signing. Now you guys can get assets for me instead of just being like, bye.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's
okay. Nice thing. C's a different story, but.
Dude, OKC just racked up picks. They can't even really be that mad.
They did, but if we're talking about it from a loyalty perspective, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I know I signed this big contract and had this big welcome back party with Westbrook, but yeah, you're going to need to trade me, like, now.
In the back of Sam Presti's head, he had to think, because we've all thought this about OKC, that ship has sailed. Like,
I agree.
They had 2 years. They were never going to win a championship. They had no flexibility. It almost is probably in some ways a relief that Paul George asked for a trade. They would never publicly say that, but I think in some ways it really is.
I mean, yeah, you don't have to worry about losing him for nothing, like the Kemba Walker situation to a degree, right?
Or just being a mediocre Western Conference playoff team that gets knocked out in the first and second round and never has a chance to go to a championship because it's just not a great fit on that roster.
Yeah.
Utah.
Players you love. Not like stars. Like, I know you like stars. Like, what are guys in the NBA that you watch? It's like, I like that guy. Carmelo? Is that Carmelo Anthony jersey?
No, it is not. This is I will have you know, this is a vintage Sam Decker jersey.
Oh, God.
Decker.
That's one of those.
I can smell that from here.
that's one of those players. He's my favorite college player of all time, so it's kind of a given that he was going to
translate. He's your favorite college player of all time?
Yeah.
That's the best guy you could watch?
He was good in college, though. Like,
You got to think of it. I'm standing in Louisville, Kentucky, and our rivalry is the Kentucky Wildcats. And if you remember that Sam Decker ended that perfect dynasty in the Final Four of 2015, and that was kind of the cap off and put the cherry on top. But I love Kemba Walker too. I mean, it's kind of impossible not to like Kemba Walker. The guy's just a class act. Especially you feel bad for him for what he had to endure in Charlotte. And you got to love King James. I mean, both of them.
He said no stars.
I don't care. Come on, I don't bro. Care. I don't care.
Joe Harris.
Yeah.
I love, that was coming.
I love Joe Harris myself. I mean, Caris LeVert's not a role player, so I'm not putting him on there. A random guy that I really love is Sean Livingston. I don't know. I've always appreciated him coming back from that injury because that was just crazy that his leg snapped and he can still play. Ed Davis, love him. Let's see some other role players.
I like Steven Adams. Well, Jamal Crawford's a guy that I've always liked just because he's so shifty and fun to watch.
He's fun. Steven Adams because he looks like Jason Momoa and he's just sexy and I love him. And he's a Kiwi, so I've got to support my Southern Hemisphere dudes. Deli because he's Aussie. Aaron Baines because Nick said he hates him. Mm. Bainesy with that trash little man bun thing that he's got going on.
Yeah, nothing like yours.
Yeah, mine's all hair. Like, there's no shaving. It's just hair.
I got two names.
Deuces. Oh,
your love and hate list are very different.
Corey Brewer, Lance Stevenson.
Oh man, you talk about that. You talk about it stinking from here.
My boy,
Corey Brewer.
Joaquin Noah too. If you're ever not respecting him anymore,
Are you a Florida fan?
I am. My aunt and uncle are professors at the college.
Okay, so. Okay, that makes sense because if you like Joaquin Noah and Corey Brewer, you must be either severely misled or you must be a Florida fan. So
they play some good NBA basketball.
I like Paul Millsap.
Solid.
D'Angelo Russell, just because he resides from my hometown.
P.J. Tucker is probably one of my favorite role players.
Yes, Austin Rivers is a guy that I've always liked, too, just because of that badass mentality that he carries around.
Give me some you know who I'm not a big fan of? Devin Booker.
You know who also deserves some major love that I can't believe I forgot? He's definitely one of my favorite role players, Jared Dudley.
Oh, yeah, Dudley's nice.
I'm telling you, it's almost like every day I see the gif of the Nets players doing that dance with their legs and watching Dudley go off. It's literally so entertaining, and I can't stop watching it when it comes on.
Yeah, that's what it's like to watch the Nets for 82 games, right, Jack?
Fun times. Kyrie, don't stop it.
And that's all I had, boys. That's.
Does anyone want to have an existential conversation about Supermax contracts that Dalton touched on?
Dive in. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'll turn this into, because we're not doing JBT this week, so I've got a topic that I wanted to talk about, and I put it on just my notes because I like to keep notes for podcasts and NBA chatter. Now, this is via, because there was a Bleacher Report article a little while ago from Howard Beck. The teams that do it right get rewarded, or it doesn't matter. Even the best NBA teams can't compete with the superstar whims. So this whole Supermax isn't working. The general CBA isn't working, and it's too far askewed toward the superstars. I made my thoughts known on a previous outlet, but can there be anything that can be done to sort of even this playing field so it's not like New York and LA dominating the sort of free agent market in that sort of sense?
If you sign a Supermax, you can't be traded.
I agree with that. We're really riding a fine line here, fellas, because, you know, there's been increased chatter about them completely taking away, like, the idea of cap space. And unless you want this to be like European soccer or Major League Baseball, I mean, we're trying to increase competition. That's going to make the rich get richer. We talked about that on the Emergency Westbrook podcast with talking about small markets and stuff like that. So it's really just interesting is what do you do with the Supermax contracts? Do you restructure so that they're not as holding on the overall cap of the team? Or I really have yet to kind of formulate an opinion of what my stance is in that regard. But, I mean, Nick, that kind of is a viable option of restricting a trade for a player who was given the Supermax or maybe even the Max.
And then also reduce the size of the Supermax. So, for example, like Chris Paul can't sign a 4-year Supermax, and there should be an age limit too. Like, if you're paying someone a Supermax over the age of 34, they're probably not going to live up to that value of $40 million.
Isn't that on the organizations and their sort of, you know, due diligence to just not be dumb and give a 32-year-old a 5-year extension? Isn't that their own, like, you know, the misgivings of, you know, because at the end of the day, the person that has to pay that is the owner, the billionaire. Oh, no, he has to pay an extra $20 million in luxury tax. Who cares? I think that it's like some of it is a little bit just like it favors us. Like, we're favoring the owners. We're favoring the front offices. Get their employees their money. Don't reduce any of that stuff.
I don't think it favors. I think what it does is like it hurts a team's capability of having a great roster.
Yeah.
Like if it was just like you're allocated one Supermax spot and that wasn't part of your cap space and your cap space is something different and you could give one Supermax to one player and that doesn't necessarily have an impact, because that's what it does. It really hinders your entire franchise. Like look at John Wall's contract, like we talked about earlier. Washington screwed because they're paying him $40 million. Same thing for OKC. Now, same thing for Houston. And Houston might end up having two Supermaxes by the time James Harden is, you know, his contract is up. So it's just a weird situation. I get the concept, but it never really made sense that you could just Supermax somebody and expect them to stay. Because at the end of the day, players, as much as they care about money, a lot of them care more about winning.
There would have to be some sort of contract structure where it says like the first, like you have to play 60% of your contract.
Two years, right?
You sit, for example, say you have to play the first 2 years, and then if you would like to demand a trade, you can, but you're locked into something. Because I think you're right. I mean, we've seen this with the Paul George. This is, I said this on the a couple shows ago. He set the precedent now that you can get the Supermax and within a year work your way out of that place. And so now the Supermax, which was supposed to be a safety net for small market teams, now it's not a safety net. It's almost just like a player can lie to you, sit there and be like, hey, I'm here long term. I want to be with you. You give them the money, and then a year later, hey, I'm out. And so now there's a loophole. And I don't know if there is a sure way, Jack, to address that kind of problem.
Yeah, I think – I don't know if there is either. And I think that there are minds smarter than us that will probably be already starting to think about that, because I think a lot of people – are a little frustrated. And, you know, for teams like the Indiana Pacers, like the Utah Jazz, the onus is on them to do a lot more than organizations like the New York Knicks, the Lakers, the Houston Rockets, the Miami Heat, because they have the cachet of being that market team. You know, you get to play for this team, you get to live in this city. Whereas the Utah Jazz are forced to go, we need to hit on every draft pick, the Oklahoma City Thunder. We need to hit on every draft pick, which Sam Presti pretty much did. And it still didn't work out for him. So I think there's a lot more pressure on those sort of smaller market teams. And I think that, you know, obviously, you know, the Utah Jazz are doing everything right. The Indiana Pacers are doing a lot of things right with the contracts they're giving out and Kevin Pritchard helping things down there. But, you know, you can be the Los Angeles Lakers and have a gargantuanly shit season last year and still land Anthony Davis and a lot of these sort of guys and be a championship contender just a season later. I do think that there is parity right now, but I think that the parity lies, it's always going to be advantageous to be in a select few cities as well. And I don't think that geography should be, you know, an underlying factor that automatically makes you a contender. But at the end of the day, you can't necessarily change that in any way. Yeah, like you have to provide more incentives to lesser teams. So like the Utah Jazz, you need to give, like right now happening in the AFL, there's, you know, a lot of these lesser teams in markets outside of Melbourne, which are non sort of franchisey sort of destinations, want to come back. So they have a lot of time, a lot of difficulty retaining their talent. So it's a similar sort of way. And then because it's different, because it's a not-for-profit sort of league, it's not run by owners. It's run by the members and the sort of ticket holders. So it's a really tricky system.
I'll say just one thing. Paul George's contract was not a supermax. It was just a full-out max. And then I think one thing that the NFL does that's interesting, the NBA could maybe take something away from it. No, one thing they could take away from the NFL. What you can do with younger players, you're able to tender them with draft picks. So hypothetically, this is usually in the younger player. I'm not a CBA expert for the NFL, but it's a basic understanding. So, hey, my player's a free agent. I'm going to tender him with a first-round pick. So now if you sign him, you have to give me a first-round pick or I'm going to retain him. So that would be the best way to protect them. But I think there's no way to get around the geography. You're just going to have more opportunities in a big city. You know, some players might prefer the small markets, but at the end of the day, you're going to prefer a big city if you want to make the most possible money. And I'll say this too, the big market impact has slowed down a touch compared to where it was in the past, where I think players are now going to get more of a spotlight in a small market because of social media.
Yeah, social media definitely plays a huge part in things.
And like, just kind of connecting the dots, we talk about the mindset in free agency from 2016 till now. And I think that's why you see shorter deals, is because NBA front offices realize that opportunity, one, is not a lengthy visitor, and two, that it doesn't really stay for long. So you try to remain as flexible as you can in terms of roster fluidity and stuff like that. So you really have to kind of prime yourself to almost prepare for the worst, in a sense, by kind of giving yourself some insurance with, I guess you would say, like, how, kind of how OKC has done with getting their guys in return for Russell Westbrook and Paul George. So it's really just a matter of keeping yourself afloat. And I think that teams realize that the way to do that now is to give incentivized short-term deals with team or player options for a 1 or 2 year deal, and not a 4 year deal, because it's a lot harder to move out of those rather than an expiring.
And also, at the end of the day, there's just general managers and front office members making really bad decisions. Like, the Hornets have just made numerous bad decisions that if they had even a competent team that was maybe a mid-level playoff team, Kemba Walker would probably end up staying. The fact is, they've been so bad and mediocre the last couple of years, not able to even get in the playoffs, and they have no flexibility to get better. Why would he stay? There's no reason that would make sense for him to stay.
They're going to be the worst team in the league. I mean, that's my prediction. I think I look at their lineup, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, I understand that maybe Rozier is able to carve out some sort of future in Charlotte. I like Miles Bridges and some of their younger talent, like Dwayne Bacon and maybe Devontae Graham, but that roster is just so horrendous.
I think that if we're looking, projecting forward, near term, Giannis is going to be the case study that we look towards. Is he going to stay in Milwaukee long term? The front office has done a lot of good things. Was not going into the luxury tax from Malcolm Brogdon a mistake? Does that mean they lose this transcendent talent who is probably the most popular player in the NBA? You know, we see with all-star votes, he's almost beating LeBron James, and he's beaten Stephen Curry on plenty of occasions. And then to maybe more short, long-term, Zion Williamson in New Orleans. Can David Griffin, one of the most savvy GMs of the recent memory, can he maintain, you know, this transcendent talent in New Orleans, unlike what Dell Demps could do with Anthony Davis? So I think there's a lot of pressure on those sort of organizations, and they have to do every little thing right. And yes, I guess to an extent it's unfair. You know, like I sort of said, to repeat, you know, the Lakers can do everything wrong and still get Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It seems to me that it's just not a corrupt system, but a flawed system. Whereas I think in some other sports that I follow, there is that probably more equal parity more consistently. You know, the Lakers are always going to be a contender from now on because of the cachet that they built with Magic Johnson in the 80s. Same with the Boston Celtics with Larry Bird, because they built that history. And now, because of the modern NBA, there aren't teams that can build that long-term sustainable success and turn themselves into a new super team. Maybe the Bucks could do it with Giannis because he almost defies the NBA in terms of his personality and such. But, you know, the Pacers, the Jazz, these sort of teams aren't going to become transcendent, you know, cachet teams in the NBA, drawing free agents left, right, and center, because they're not the Lakers and they're not the Celtics, they're not the Knicks. And maybe the Brooklyn Nets can do it with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And maybe the Clippers can do it. Maybe they can, you know, reverse the sort of curse. But even at the same time, those guys signed 2+1 deals. So there's a lot of pressure on these organizations. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just think that is, it's a reality.
And it's also a reality, though, in like the regular workplace, in a sense where, like, if you, a small business is competing with a big business, the big business can offer you more opportunities. You're probably going to go there. So I think it's just part of the work environment. Like, if you were offered a job in, no disrespect, this is just the first that came to my mind, Kentucky or New York City, and your pay is the same, and you're going to have more things to do in New York City. Like, no disrespect to Kentucky, but that's what you're probably going to try to live in if you want that environment. If you don't want the city atmosphere, you'll go to Kentucky and have a little bit more laid back life.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So
I think on that note, we have been on here for a long time.
An hour.
So I appreciate everybody checking in, listening on YouTube, leaving us comments and whatnot. We really appreciate you. Make sure you hit that little square in the right corner with the OTG logo. Subscribe. And you can follow for audio form, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Dash Radio, and Google Podcasts.
Peace out, knuckleheads.